right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is September 12th, 2025. And our top story this morning, I love to talk about this. This is my favorite top story of any morning, silver. It's my favorite of the shiny. If you guys don't know, silver is pretty much the reason why this channel exists in the first place. I made my first video during the silver squeeze, and well, it looks like we're back. Although it looks really different this time. Sometimes the silver squeeze you get is not the silver squeeze that you wanted or that you expected. But it is a squeeze nonetheless, and I keep my little Murica flag bar handy for just such an occasion, because last night the price of silver, the front month contract on the COMEX, very briefly touched $43 an ounce. And let's just take a minute to appreciate that. $43 an ounce. Man, we would have killed for those prices a couple of years ago. Now look, we're back down now. We didn't spend very much time there. We went as high as 43.09 overnight. We sold off a little bit, but the metal's still up this morning. And yet, where is the enthusiasm for silver? Now, we're starting to see it a little bit. It's starting to show up in some of the finance channels, starting to see a little bit more mainstream interest in gold. They're no longer talking about it like it was a pet rock or anything like that. But you know what? Gold has been ripping. It's been making an all-time high on a daily, seemingly at least weekly basis for a couple of months now. Silver's kind of lagged, and silver's got a lot of catching up to do. And we've been talking about this a lot on this channel, about the gold to silver ratio. We've talked an awful lot about it on my Patreon group with my magnanimous melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Shout out to you guys. Thank you for supporting the channel. We've been flashing that gold to silver ratio chart on a weekly basis, saying, guys, this looks like silver set to outperform gold, and it's happening very quietly. So let's talk a little bit about some of the mechanics of this. Again, it's that New York price, that front month contract on the COMEX that's really ripping here. It's been trading between 60 and 70 cents an ounce higher than the London spot price for the better part of a couple of weeks now. Now, it looks like this was set off with a little bit of tariff jitters a couple of weeks ago. We had silver was added to the draft list of the critical minerals by the United States Geological Survey. And when something is declared a critical mineral, it usually means there's some kind of policy control is coming regarding the movement of that metal. And it kind of reignited the tariff jitters. A lot of people thought, okay, they're going to be putting tariffs on the imports of metal to try to stimulate domestic production or to try to keep the metal in the U.S. or to bring the metal to the U.S. from London. And those tariff jitters, man, we've seen this a couple of times this year for varying reasons. Metal prices tend to react. When there was worries about tariffs on copper, we saw silver react strongly, gave back some of those gains, but not all of them. Now those tariff jitters are back again. And it's starting to cause what looks like a paper shortage. The lease rates for silver have skyrocketed in London. Now, historically, the cost to lease silver, which is like basically to borrow silver in order to short it, the cost to borrow silver has historically been around nothing, like a fraction of a percent. It costs you next to nothing to borrow the metal. It just sits in the vault. They put your name on it. It lets you go short it in the futures market. You collect a fraction of a penny in arbitrage. And that's how a lot of these big trading houses have made money off of this. But the cost to lease silver has skyrocketed to 5.5% recently. That looks like a shortage of silver on paper. Now, guys, there is no actual shortage of physical silver. You go into a coin shop, they're swimming in inventory. The metal is everywhere. But there is a shortage on paper. And you can see it actually in cost to borrow shares of SLV, the silver ETF. Shout out to my friend Bob Coleman from Idaho Armored Vaults. By the way, if you're not following Bob Coleman on Twitter, you freaking should be. He has been money for like 2 years in a row now. He has had like just great call after great call in the metals market. The cost to borrow shares of SLV historically have averaged about 0.5%. Right now, they're about 1.55%, and they continue to rise. They've risen dramatically over the last week or so. It's something Bob drew attention to earlier this week. So what's going on here, guys? You've got a lot of short interest in the metal. You got a lot of people are borrowing metal on the COMEX. A lot of people are leasing metal in London. A lot of people are borrowing shares of the SLV. When you have a big buildup of paper shorts against the metal, That's conditions for a short squeeze, isn't it? Ask people who are short Open Door how that worked out for them recently, by the way. High short interest, potential for a short squeeze, guys. Again, there's plenty of physical metal. It's just all in the wrong place. It's in London, and they want it here in New York because of questions about policy. And look, we watched gold break out to these all-time highs. The gold to silver ratio, the technicals look phenomenal on the gold to silver ratio, suggesting silver will continue to outperform gold in the short term. We'll look at some of those charts today. I really like this story, guys. And again, it looks nothing like 2021. This is definitely not the silver squeeze, although we're using the hashtag silver squeeze today in this and the description of this live stream, something I haven't done in a long time. But this actually is a squeeze on paper in silver. It looks a lot like we tried to do in 2021, but it's actually working this time. Prices are going higher. All right, also going on this morning, guys, we had some interesting news in OpenAI, the world's biggest charity, wink, wink. OpenAI is closer to becoming a for-profit company this morning. They are tentatively reaching a deal, a non-binding memorandum of understanding, hopefully someday, to become a for-profit entity. And it looks like Microsoft is on board with this. They've been the biggest hurdle to it. The nonprofit parent group of OpenAI will receive a $100 billion stake in the soon-to-be for-profit company. $100 billion. My granny, what big not-profits you have. Microsoft has been the biggest barrier to this because Microsoft wants control of OpenAI's intellectual property. There's been a lot of questions about that. Will Microsoft continue to have exclusive access to OpenAI's API? Will they get dibs on the intellectual property? The AGI clause about when artificial general intelligence is achieved, that's been a big issue of contention. It looks like they're close to moving past that. And this is important because there's $30 billion of funding at stake for OpenAI. All that money that they're trying to raise from SoftBank, which SoftBank doesn't have, by the way, but that's a whole separate issue. But that $30 billion of money they're supposed to be raising from SoftBank is contingent upon OpenAI becoming a for-profit company. If they can't become a for-profit company, they can't have that $30 billion, which means they can't pay for all the GPUs and all the data centers they want to build. They can't pay for all this stuff with Oracle and all that other silliness from earlier this week. This whole bubble falls apart if OpenAI doesn't become a for-profit company and unlock that $30 billion in funding. And even then, the bubble probably still will fall apart at some point soon. It just will be a few days later than that. In a similar note, NVIDIA and OpenAI are close to a deal in the UK to build sovereign data centers for the British government. That is in the same UK where the average power cost is about 600% of the power prices in the United States, which are already a limiting factor for AI expansion here in the States. I'm sure it's going to do wonders for the UK power grid. Okay, good luck with that one. By the way, that's NVIDIA's subsidiary Nscale is cutting this deal with OpenAI, where NVIDIA sells the chips to OpenAI, and then OpenAI rents them back to NVIDIA, Nscale, who then operates them for the British government. So that's cool, selling chips to themselves there. Another round-tripping scheme that's worked out great for them so far. We got an interesting story involving CoreWeave that nobody is talking about freaking anywhere. Shout out to my buddy Jose Orozco, who sent me this tip on Patreon earlier. I can't believe I haven't heard about this. The Carissa Data Center in Chesterfield County, Virginia, that's a data center that is leased and operated by CoreWeave, caught fire for the fourth time in a year this week. Nothing to see here, just our data center catching fire four times within 9 months. Look, all the fire investigators and the fire marshals are being forced to sign NDAs. We don't know what's going on here. It looks like a manufacturing defect involving batteries. The fires were limited to the battery room. They didn't spread. They didn't burn up the billions of dollars of GPUs or anything like that. But hey, four fires in 1 year at the same data center. Maybe somebody want to look at what's going on at this place. I don't know. That's right. We don't ask questions about CoreWeave. Just ignore the randos. By the way, CoreWeave insiders are back dumping stock again this week. We have had four filings for proposed sales of securities by insiders and the trusts and LLCs that they control just in the last 2 days. That's after multiple filings over the last few weeks. They continue to cash out tens of millions of dollars at a time, a piece, in shares. Very lucrative trade for the CoreWeave founders. By the way, CoreWeave founders, if you guys are looking to offset the pollution from the fires at your data centers, I know of a couple of shell companies in the Cayman Islands where you can get carbon credits without any prying eyes from law enforcement or tax authorities. Wink, wink. We got a big merger from Paramount and Warner Brothers this morning. That's the Ellison family is driving that one. The son of Larry Ellison, who's now like the richest guy in the world because of his stake in Oracle, that whole story about Oracle rallying like 80% earlier this week. Well, they're going to take all that Oracle money and they're going to buy a media conglomerate with it. That's going on this morning. We got to talk about Tricolor's social bonds. I did a video earlier this week about Tricolor Auto Group and their bankruptcy. Now we got to talk about their AAA rated social bonds and what's going on there. And last but not least, the EU is placing export taxes on aluminum scrap. This is an interesting story here. It's not like this big, like earth-shattering news, but there's been a lot of news about the aluminum market over the last couple of days. People trying to corner the market, Malaysian inventories. It all stems from the fact that these tariffs that President Trump put on metals have thrown the global commodities market into chaos, kind of like what's going on with silver, or at least what might be going on with silver. And the whole world, everything is reshuffling to adapt, and there is a lot of things are moving around. The whole global order is reshuffling. Oh, we've got so much to talk about, and it's only 9:16 in the morning. Hey, how about we shrink my big melon of a head, and let's see what's going on in markets this morning. Don't forget that like button for the YouTube algorithm and that subscribe button for you new guys. Come on back tomorrow. Have your coffee. Well, come on back on Monday and have your coffee with the Melonheads because we do this one every business day. Right now, the S&P 500 is pretty much flat here. It's been negative for most of the morning. 6,000. Well, forget the futures price. It's up 0.6 points. Nothing percent move in the S&P this morning after a big move in stocks yesterday off of that CPI report. Right now, we've got the Dow is down about 55 points after having a heck of a day yesterday, again, on that CPI report that didn't shock anybody, and the market rallied on that lack of shock. This morning, it's down a little bit, about 57 points, 0.12% lower, and the NASDAQ is higher by 36 points, 0.15%. Tech continues its rally. Looking over at the dollar, we are 22 basis points higher on the Dixie. 97.76. That's higher by about 0.25%. Bonds are moving. We got yields moving a little higher this morning. That's bonds moving slightly lower. The 30-year yield, 4.686. That's off by 3.5 points. The 10-year is at 4.056. That's higher by 4.5 points. Did I say the 30 was down? The 30 is up. The 30-year yield is up. Sorry, I get my wires crossed sometimes. The 2-year yield, 3.554, up 2.5 points. And the 1 month is red, down a fraction of 1 point at 4.145. Let's do things a little out of order this morning. Looking at Bitcoin, I posted yesterday that Bitcoin was looking like it was going to reject its 50-day moving average. We had drawn attention to the 50-day moving average shown here. That's that blue line. For the last couple of live streams saying I wasn't going to get excited about Bitcoin until we recaptured that 50-day moving average. And we rejected it several times yesterday. And of course, as soon as I say something on Twitter about, hey, it's rejecting the 50-day moving average, within like 5 minutes, it blew through the 50-day moving average. So that's me putting a big hex on things. But right now, we look like there is a retest in progress of that 50-day moving average. And the reason I keep pointing that out, guys, is we're about 73 weeks since the halving right now. And typically, it is 75 to 77 weeks after the halving that Bitcoin has its big correction. And it's looking like we're close to a top here. We're within weeks of a top. According to previous halving schedules, somebody goes kablooey in the next few weeks. I'm leaning towards these crypto treasury companies, which are just getting obscenely ridiculous. But whatever it is, right now, it looks like Bitcoin has a chance at making one more run at an all-time high before the onset of crypto winter. As always, guys, be careful on leverage. Don't borrow money to buy crypto here. You will get wiped out in the correction, which is very likely to happen soon. All right, let's look at the commodities board now. We have got gold is higher. Spot gold, $3,650. That's up by 16 bucks here, 0.44%. Overnight, we hit a high of 36.56. I would also point out that the December gold future overnight hit a high of 36.95. we are flirting with that 3,700 level for gold here in the futures market. But it is my favorite of the shiny silver, in particular, that COMEX December future. That's the front month future contract. Right now, we are trading at 42.71, up 56 cents or 1.34% higher. But overnight, our high, we hit 43.09. So we had a 43 handle. It was brief. We're back below that level. But $43 silver, guys, we are there. Now, the spot price, interestingly enough, the London spot price, well below that level, currently at 42.07. Now, that's also up 51 cents, 1.25%, big move in silver this morning, but still trading, what are we, about 65 cents roughly below that COMEX price. That's that big delta, that exchange for physical premium. New York is trading at a higher value. That's bringing, New York trading at a higher price. That's bringing the metal from London into the States. And people are doing that because they're afraid of tariffs on silver. We don't know if there's going to be tariffs on silver. We've had this worry several times already this year, only to be disappointed. This is now, by my count, the third time the market has run up anticipating tariffs on silver, only to be disappointed. So maybe this fizzles out again, but the price stays higher when it fizzles out. Either way, guys, I like the shiny. Let's touch some other things before we look at the charts. Copper is down about 0.07%. We've got platinum is up by 0.8%. Palladium is higher by about 1.8%. Crude oil catching a bit as well this morning, 1.3% higher, $63.21 for October WTI futures. Now, let's talk a little bit about the mechanics of this squeeze here. Silver borrowing costs surge on tariff-driven supply jitters. This is a few days old. This is from Monday here, but it does show what's going on here. In particular, look at this chart here, guys. This is those silver lease rates shown on this chart in Bloomberg. They spent most of the last few years bouncing around nothing point nothing. All right. I mean, they typically it's very cheap to lease silver in order to short it. It's very cheap to borrow metal. It just sits there. They don't even move it, just a fraction of a percent. But all of a sudden this year, it's gotten more expensive. And right now we are at a high of 5.5%. Surging lease rates for silver are once again upending the precious metals market, with traders fearing that possible U.S. tariffs could squeeze already tight supplies in London as price dislocations reemerge between key trading hubs. Washington last month categorized silver as critical to U.S. national security, fueling worries that its new status may draw the attention of President Donald Trump, who ordered an investigation into critical minerals in April. That sent futures in New York above the international benchmark as traders priced in the risk of silver getting hit with tariffs and holders scrambled to ship the white metal into the U.S. to capture premiums. So silver is moving across the pond once again. And guys, Bob Coleman, a couple of days ago, this is at Profits Plus ID on X. Bob has been a regular guest on the channel to talk about metals. It was a couple of days ago that he drew attention to this silver ETF alert. Borrowing fee on the SLV ETF is starting to rise. And what Bob is linking to is here, this chart is showing the cost to borrow shares of the SLV ETF. Now, these are daily candles, and you can see starting at the beginning of this month, roughly about the 4th of December, you can see how the cost to borrow SLV shares, the historical average has been around 0.5%, maybe 0.6%. And now we're up around 1.6%. So while it's getting more expensive to borrow physical metal, it's also getting more expensive to borrow paper metal. These are all things indicating that there is a lot of built-up short interest. And look, when the price is ripping and the short interest is building, the possibility for a short squeeze is there. And that's what Bob was talking about. Now, look, silver has had a really nice price move. This is the chart. And silver, the last time, by the way, that we saw that big surge in borrowing costs for the SLV ETF, that was in mid to early July. That's when we had this run up in price. And now here we are. We broke out of a one-year channel about a week and a half ago, sitting around $42. But it is this chart that I really like here, guys, this gold to silver ratio. This is how many ounces of silver it takes to make 1 ounce of gold. And we went to ridiculous highs. We've showed this chart a couple of times here, but the technicals just look great. I mean, we went up as high as 105 back in April on the first round of tariff hysteria. Silver was just way, way underperforming gold. People were worried about the economy collapsing. The price of gold was ripping, but silver was just sitting there. And I remember saying, like, guys, the gold to silver ratio never stays this high for long. This means the white metal is going to outperform gold very soon. And of course, that's what it has done. And then we've had all these key technical events. We broke down below the 200-day moving average at the beginning of July. And then we rejected the retest of the 200-day moving average. That was at the beginning of August. Then we had a death cross. That is a very bearish technical indicator when the 50-day moving average crosses below the 200-day moving average. And again, a bearish technical indicator, that's for the gold to silver ratio. So that would suggest the ratio heading sharply lower, which means silver outperforming gold. And we had a rejection of the 50-day moving average. And then look what happened yesterday. We actually did break above the 50-day moving average earlier this week and then slam right back below it yesterday, continuing this morning, the gold to silver ratio moving sharply lower. And we're currently sitting at about 86.6. Guys, the historical average of the gold to silver ratio is something between like 35 and 65. If you go back hundreds of years, it comes out of the ground about 9 to 1. Historical average, 30 to 60 to 1. We went as high as 105 to 1, and now we're sitting at 86. Point being here, guys, the setup for silver is just freaking beautiful. I like the shiny. You may have heard that before. All right. And by the way, yeah, that 86 to 1 gold to silver ratio, still very high, still very historically high. Let's shift gears a little bit here. OpenAI realignment to give nonprofit over a $100 billion stake. Charities with $100 billion stakes in companies. Okay, that's a very 2020s thing. Apparently, charity work is very, very lucrative these days. $100 billion bucks, 0.1 trillion for the charity. OpenAI said it's closer to converting into a more traditional for-profit company, nearing the resolution of painful negotiations with top shareholder Microsoft and outlining terms of at least $100 billion in equity for its nonprofit arm. Plan changes will give the existing OpenAI nonprofit control over a new public benefit corporation, Chairman Brett Taylor said in a statement Thursday, and it would provide the nonprofit with an equity stake that would make it one of the world's most well-resourced philanthropic organizations in the world. Yes, this well-resourced philanthropic organization, which is currently doubling the cost of electric utility bills for poor people all over America. Yeah, well, you know what? I'm sorry, poor people. You're just going to have to turn your heat and electric off this winter because the philanthropists need to keep their chatbots running. And if that leaves you cold and in the dark, well, it's for the greater good. Just ask effective altruist Sam Altman. There he is. You know, he's the world's richest man, and he got there doing charity work, or not the world's richest man, but probably soon to be one of the world's richest men. And he got there with charity work. Isn't that just a feel-good story? Let's see. Microsoft and OpenAI have been holding talks for months about reshaping their relationship, in part to secure Microsoft's assent for the restructuring of the startup. In exchange for massive financial backing, Microsoft has the right to incorporate OpenAI's tools into its products. Winning Microsoft's approval for the changes has been one of the key roadblocks to OpenAI's plans, Bloomberg has reported. And again, if they don't get Microsoft's buy-in on this transition, OpenAI will not be able to pay its bills. $30 billion of that funding that was announced earlier this year is contingent upon this transition happening. Now, they overcame a big hurdle yesterday, but it still hasn't happened. They got till the end of the year to do it. Otherwise, who knows? Meanwhile, NVIDIA and OpenAI to back a major investment in UK AI infrastructure. There's Jensen. He's donning his formal leather jacket, heading over to the UK because NVIDIA and OpenAI are in discussions about backing a major investment in Britain focused on boosting artificial intelligence infrastructure in the country. The two tech firms are discussing a sizable deal to support data center development in the country, which could ultimately be worth billions of dollars, a person familiar with the matter told CNBC, confirming earlier reports from the Financial Times. Here's more of that money OpenAI doesn't have. Remember that they need that funding from SoftBank, which SoftBank doesn't have, in order to even survive as a company. And then they're supposedly going to spend $300 billion with Oracle. Well, here's a few more billion dollars that they don't have that they're going to spend in the UK. Also, here's NVIDIA buying its own chips again. This is interesting. The companies are still working through various processes at the moment, with NVIDIA and cloud computing firm Nscale, said the person who did not want to be named due to the sensitivity of the issue. NVIDIA and Nscale did not immediately respond to CNBC's request for comment. Nscale is NVIDIA's data center arm, yet they're literally selling chips to themselves. Okay, because that's not accounting fraud. Countries around the world have been courting major U.S. AI players in a bid to boost their own national infrastructure and technological ambitions. The topic of so-called sovereign AI, the idea of onshoring the data processing infrastructure behind advanced artificial intelligence systems, has been top of mind for officials as governments look to reduce their dependency on foreign countries for critical technologies. That's right, UK. Why use foreign countries' technology to police and arrest people for insensitive social media posts and harmful memes when you can have your own sovereign data centers policing the speech of your citizenry? Can't have people saying offensive things. Not when NVIDIA can buy their own chips and OpenAI can use money they don't have to build data centers within your own country. Oh, you got to love this bubble, don't you? It's just wonderful what they're doing. All right. Shout out to my buddy, Jose Orozco. Jose sent me this story yesterday, and you don't hear about it anywhere in the press. The financial media is not covering this anywhere. Bloomberg, CNBC, none of the big AI bro podcasters are covering this. You got to go to the Facebook page of the Chesterfield County Fire and EMS to find this one. We want to provide an update on this morning's fire at the Charissa Technology Park at the 1400 block of Meadowville Technology Parkway. This is a data center that is leased and operated by CoreWeave. Chesterfield Fire and EMS has wrapped up operations at the facility following this morning's fire, which was contained by the sprinkler system to a battery room. Crews remained on scene throughout the day to control flare-ups, which can happen with dealing with fires involving batteries. This is the fourth incident in the last year at the facility. All of these fires have involved batteries, by the way. The company is actively working with the Chesterfield Fire Marshal's office to address the root cause of these incidents and to reduce the risk for future fires. And this is hilarious. I love this sentence at the end. It's worth noting fires at data centers like this are rare, and we are optimistic that proposed improvements at this facility will address the current concerns. All right, one sentence ago, they told us this was the fourth fire at this facility in a year, and then they tell us that these fires are rare. Well, I would point out, guys, that fires are particularly rare when CoreWeave's lawyers are allowed to proofread the public statements put out by the Chesterfield fire officials. Yeah, fires are very rare for the fourth time this year. We're having a lot of rare fires, guys. Don't pay no attention here. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, CoreWeave, they're dumping stock as well. These are the SEC filings from CoreWeave's investor relations website. And we have had four more filings in the last 2 days on the 9th and the 10th for proposed sale of securities. This is CEO Michael Intrator and co-founder Brandon McBee and the trusts that they operate, or the LLCs that they control, selling tens of millions of dollars each several times, dumping. I don't know how much these guys have sold. It's in the billions. CoreWeave's founders have cashed out billions of dollars since this lockup has expired, and they're continuing on a near daily basis. They do take the weekend off. It's worth pointing out these guys are not selling stock on the weekend because markets are closed, so you got that going for you. But if markets are open, chances are they're dumping stock. But you'd never guess CoreWeave shares are trading at, the market is now open, $112.69, nearly triple their IPO price. Congratulations, guys. If you bought this stock since the IPO, you are exit liquidity for CoreWeave's executives and Magnetar Capital. Meanwhile, we've got a big merger this morning. Paramount Skydance prepares Ellison-back bid for Warner Brothers Discovery. This is a very big merger in the media industry. Paramount Skydance is preparing a majority cash bid for Warner Brothers Discovery that's backed by the Ellison family, according to people familiar with the situation. The bid will be for the entire company, including its cable networks and movie studio. Warner said last year that it planned to restructure into two operating divisions, one focused on legacy cable TV and the other on streaming and studios. Warner Brothers has a nearly $33 billion market cap on early Thursday prior to the report on the potential bid, more than double that of Paramount Skydance, which is going to buy them. A bid hasn't yet been submitted and plans could still fall apart. Warner shares rallied in pre-market trading Friday. They jumped nearly 30% on Thursday afternoon after the Wall Street Journal's report on the potential bid, while Paramount Skydance shares rose nearly 16%. By preparing a play for the company before Warner's planned split, Paramount Skydance is attempting to preempt a potential bidding war for the studio and streaming unit that could include deep-pocketed technology companies such as Amazon and Apple. If successful, such a deal would bring together two of Hollywood's most storied studios and the parent companies of streaming services, HBO Max and Paramount Plus. Warner is home to Barbie, DC Comics, Harry Potter, and TV shows such as The White Lotus, as well as cable networks CNN, TBS, and TNT. The scale of the potential combination could bring antitrust and regulatory scrutiny. Skydance, run by David Ellison, the son of Oracle billionaire Larry Ellison, weeks ago closed its deal to merge with Paramount, which owns Nickelodeon, MTV, Comedy Central, and its movie studio. Hey, maybe, just maybe, if we merge all of these companies into one, put all these heads together, maybe we can get one original idea for a decent movie that isn't a remake of something somebody else did years ago, or just a whole bunch of liberal ideology forced down our throats in the form of political messaging. Maybe we actually get something watchable if these companies all merge into one. Or maybe the problem just gets worse. Warner Brothers shares are up 8% this morning on this news, $17.49, up $1.33 since the open. All right, we got to talk one more time, guys. Again, you know, I'm sure I get some of the crypto bros who are upset that I'm saying crypto winter is right around the corner. But look, the fraud gets frothiest right at the top, right before the burst. And here's another one. This is from a few days ago. But another 1,000% gainer, Caliber Company surges on digital asset purchase a day after 8co's 3,000% gain. And we talked about 8co. It was ticker Octo. Now it's ticker Orbs. They became a WorldCoin treasury company, and the stock rallied 3,000%. It's since sold off like two-thirds of that amount. It's basically a pump and dump. Now we've got this one. A loss-making asset manager saw its stock leap on Tuesday. And just the latest example of how a corporate announcement of the purchase of a digital asset has sparked sensational returns. Caliber Company shares, which ended Monday at $2.15, soared by over 1,000% to $35 in New York following the company's announcement that it had purchased Chainlink tokens, another shitcoin treasury company, a move it previously said it would undertake. This comes one day after 8co stock Octo surged to $45, up from $1.45 on Friday after a $250 million investment from Sam Altman in the Sam Altman cryptocurrency WorldCoin. All right, so we got this Caliber Co. company. They rally 1,000% to $35 because they're going to buy Chainlink. Let's see what's happened in the two or three days since then. Oh, look, hey, look at this chart, guys. If that looks like a pump and dump to you, congratulations, you're paying attention, because that's what a pump and dump looks like. All right, the stock is like worth $2. They announce they're buying a shitcoin, and the stock rallies over $50, over 1,000%, and then it sells off back down to $8. All right, it's still up a few hundred percent from where it was trading at. But if you bought this thing in the 40s or the 50s, all right, good luck to you guys. It's also a cautionary tale about chasing these stories, all right? By the time you hear about one of these crypto treasury companies popping up, it's already too late. You've missed the trade, all right? So don't chase into these names. They're pump and dump scams. They're going to fail spectacularly, and I think this is going to be what causes the next crypto winter, and I think it's going to start at some point soon here. Maybe not. Maybe this time is different, but famous last words. All right, let's talk about this one real quick. Tricolor files for bankruptcy. The auto lender was once an ESG favorite. Here's the reason why I want to talk about this, guys. Tricolor's bonds, shout out to my friend over at the Coastal Journal. Tricolor's auto loan-backed ESG bonds, and I'm not going to repeat everything I did in that video the other day, but these bonds, there was a AAA-rated tranche of these bonds that was sold. They're currently trading at 78 cents on the dollar. All right. Now, these bonds were just issued back in June of this year, and they were a small subset of them were AAA rated. How do you get a AAA rating on bonds that are specialized for illegal immigrants with no credit scores? How do you do that? How do you get a AAA rating on that? Because somebody sprinkled some AI pixie dust? Well, now the people who bought those bonds, which is almost certainly pensions and retirement plans, are trading at 78 cents on the dollar. They've taken a 22% haircut. All right. And by the way, inflation has eaten away at that money at the same time. So they're losing a ton of money when they need that money to grow. These were deemed social bonds. The Treasury Department certified Tricolor as a community development financial institution, which was this wonderful asterisk that you could put next to the name of an issuer. And then all of a sudden, all the ESG funds would just scramble to buy your debt, even though that debt was clearly dog shit. It doesn't matter. It says ESG on it. It says CDFI. Oh, they're so socially responsible. Buy these social bonds. A few months later, they're 78 cents on the dollar. All right. And by the way, are we going to have a conversation about ESG investing and how it flies in the face of fiduciary requirements, how, you know, financial advisors and asset managers have a duty and obligation to get the best possible return on investment for their clients, not to push their own political ideology into those investment decisions? It should be illegal to do this, but it's not. And now these people are getting 78 cents on the dollar. They're probably going to get even less than that because the company's bankrupt. They committed fraud. Oh, but don't worry. We checked boxes and it made us feel all warm and fuzzy. I'm sure the people whose pension fund is taking a hit right now are going to rest easy at night knowing their money went up in smoke because somebody's political ideology influenced the investment decision on their behalf. And I'm willing to bet most of the people who own this stuff had no idea this was even done. Their asset managers, their financial advisors put them in this stuff without their knowledge. Be careful who you trust, guys. All right. I just want to say real quick, thank you very much to Uncle Fester for supporting the channel. He says, happy Friday, Jack. I purchased a replacement iron for a soldering station yesterday. Price was $134.97. Tariff was $59.39. Wow. Well, hopefully we start making soldering irons in the United States again soon. But there you go. I mean, guys, there that we'll call that anecdata, right? Thank you, Uncle Fester, for that. Tariffs bleeding through to consumer prices, $59 on a $135 purchase. Look, guys, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? The laws of economics are very similar to the laws of physics right now. We want higher pay in the United States. We want to bring back manufacturing. We want to reshore manufacturing so people can make a better living in this country. That is the goal. And you know, it's a noble one. But the equal and opposite reaction means consumer prices are going to go higher in order to pay for that. Now, maybe some companies reduce production. Maybe some companies eat some of the tariffs, and it's debatable about to what extent that's going to happen. But it is a fact. Some of this is going to bleed through to consumer prices. And you can see it there with Uncle Fedster. It's just worth pointing that out, guys. Equal and opposite reaction. Higher prices because of tariffs. Thank you, Uncle Fedster, for the super chat and the support of the channel. Good luck in your soldering, sir. Maybe that soldering iron is going to be great. Or maybe, you know what, it's like just a little bit improved solder iron. Maybe it's got like a digital display on it, and therefore we can hedonically adjust away that price increase so it doesn't show up in CPI. I don't know. We're just thinking outside the box. Hey, shout out to Tom Dillon. Thank you, Tom, for the super chat and for supporting the channel. He says, two analysts remarked on another channel that interest rate cuts would have a negative impact on metals prices. I thought rate cuts equals easy money equals inflation. Isn't that rocket fuel for gold? What am I missing? I don't know how they're getting there. I didn't see the commentary you're talking about. Rate cuts being negative for metals prices, I don't think so. I don't think off the top of my head, no, because typically metals compete with bonds for safe haven dollars. And when interest rates go lower, bonds become less attractive, metals become more attractive. So, you know, fundamentally, no. Now, that being said, guys, it is possible there are some ways that this rate cut in September could be a selling of the news event. All right. There's been so much commentary on the September rate cuts, thanks in part to the politics of the rate cuts and Fed independence. And then everybody pre-positioning and hyperventilating over every data point about what will the Fed do? When will the Fed do it? The odds of the Fed cutting is now a virtual certainty. And so when that cut happens, it's not going to surprise anybody. So we shouldn't have any big move higher in anything. It's already priced in. That creates the risk of maybe this becomes a selling of the news event where people are like, okay, it's already here. Let's take my profits now that it's happened. That's a very common phenomenon in investing. And I don't know that that's what these analysts were alluding to, but it's very possible that's what happens. And it's also worth pointing out that historically, the beginning of a rate cutting cycle precedes some kind of black swan economic event that creates economic malaise and asset prices crater because of it, because the Fed is usually a little late to act when they do act. So maybe the analysts were pointing to that. I didn't see this particular segment, so I can't tell you what they're getting at. But if you think rate cuts are going to be bearish for gold, that's two possible ways that that could happen. Number one, selling of the news, people just taking profits, sending prices lower, or the fact that the rate cut indicates something wicked this way comes, and therefore prices, asset prices, including gold and silver, going lower. But fundamentally, lower interest rates means higher gold prices. That's typically, not 100%, but typically how the prices move. Thank you very much, Tom Dillon, for supporting the channel. Tom is back again. He says, bought a lot of silver in 2022, around $19. Oh, baby, you doubled. Congratulations. Loving this trade, Mr. Slammy can kiss my grandma. Well, isn't grandma blushing? Getting a big wet one on the cheek for Mr. Slammy. Hug your grandma, by the way. Tom, congratulations. I, too, bought some shiny in the 19 regions in 2022 and ever higher prices since and lower prices before that. I am loving this move in my favor of the shiny. Congratulations, sir. Thanks again for the super chat. Nashville Pasta Man says Tether bought 7.7 tons of gold in Q1 25. Just saying. That's right. Tether bought some gold. They are diversifying their assets. Let's keep in mind, guys, Tether says things. Tether does not get audited, so they're not independently verified, and Tether's been caught lying in the past. So it is possible they're lying about that. When people with a history of lying say things, you have to keep that in mind. That being said, it makes sense for Tether to buy gold. It makes sense. Tether is, I mean, look, they're collecting the arbitrage between, you know, the investments that they make with the dollars they're given and their operating costs. And, you know, they're basically a big bank. They're one big, giant, unregulated bank. They've been buying Bitcoin. They've been buying U.S. Treasuries, if you believe Greg Lutnick. And now they're buying gold as well. What does it mean when some of the biggest Bitcoin bros in the world are buying how much? 7.7 tons. That's a lot of gold. I mean, maybe that's small by central bank standards, but that's still, you know, scientifically speaking, a metric shit ton of metal. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. By the way, guys, we got one more that we got to talk about here. Let me see if I can get this up here because we had a late super chat yesterday. Oh, my God. What did I do? Hold on. I'm messing with my screen here. We're going to get this working. Let's put this one up on the screen because I have a thank you. I missed it yesterday because she was very sneaky. She put it up right as I was doing my sign off. But Lisa, I want to say, by the way, thanks again, Pasta Man. Lisa, thank you so much for the super chat during the sign off yesterday. She said, in recognition of the importance of our First Amendment and need to exercise it, thank you always, calling balls and strikes. And last but not least, a blessed happy birthday to my dear hubby, Chuck. A somber day, but so much to be grateful for. All right, we covered the negative stuff yesterday, so let's focus on the awesome in this. First of all, Lisa, thank you so much for being so sneaky and supporting the channel. Happy birthday, Chuck, belatedly. And yes, guys, just to remember, a lot to be grateful for. Kiss grandma, like we said early. Hug Chuck. Like and subscribe, all that good stuff. Thank you so much, Lisa, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that. And I'm sorry I missed it during the sign-off. Back to our regularly scheduled super chats. Steve Voidus is here, and he says, I have been privately selling a little bullion and junk silver. Most of the buyers are Gen Z. I find that very encouraging that Gen Z is buying. All right, now, and if you don't mind, I'm going to take like 0.1% of the credit for that. I'm going to say one in the 1,000 people in Gen Z are buying because they heard something about the shiny on this channel. Maybe that's a little generous for myself, but I'm going to go ahead and take some credit for that. Gen Z should be buying. Gen Z is really realizing that the only way to protect their wealth is not to put it in the bank. It's to be the bank themselves because the banks, the money is losing value sitting in the bank. The alternative, put it in the bank, buy U.S. treasuries, which are going to yield negative real interest rates forever. It's the only way the government can continue to survive. Or you could put it in the casino or in the crypto market and may the odds be ever in your favor. Or you could park it safely in the shiny. So I'm encouraged that Gen Z is doing that, selling a little bit of bullion and junk. I can tell you guys right now, junk silver, the 90% constitutional, is the best deal out there in the metal space. You can get huge quantities of junk silver for less than spot. A few years ago, that stuff was trading a few dollars above spot. They're melting it down and destroying it into good delivery bars. They're never going to make any more of it. So I think junk silver is a fantastic opportunity. Even at these high prices, junk silver looks really good here. Thank you very much, Steve Woitis, for supporting the channel, sir. And congratulations to the Gen Zers who are now stacking the shiny. We're gonna flash that shiny just one more time. I like the shiny. Well, guys, I just want to say thank you so much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like and subscribe for the algorithm on the way out. Thank you so much, everybody, for the super chats. Thank you to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Looking forward to talking to you guys at 2 p.m. Eastern time today for our weekly get-together on Zoom. Links are down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.